Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio and Zoom and possibly Facebook. But I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood.
Hello, everyone out there following us on our live feeds and out on our audio feeds and whatnot. It's another great Monday here in sunny and hot Southern California for me. And I know you're out there at the ranch, well, the South Lake Ranch there in Texas today, Bruce.
Oh, man. I drove back up from Houston. I get a flat tire on the toll road, and I get off at the toll road and, you know, off of Lemon. I'm at this Whole Foods changing my own tire. Not one good Samaritan from those Highland Park people. Just made old Boosie boy change that tire in the 102 degree heat, baby.
Yes, sir.
I earned my man points. So, it's been a minute.
I wonder if that was, I would expect the good Southern people of, you know, Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas to be the first in the country, you know, to really step up to the plate for something like that.
And I was looking kind of fly. I had the black golf shirt with the black golf pants and some Sperry's. I was looking pretty fly, man. I mean, I looked the part in my, XTS V Sport. I mean, not one mofo. Anyway, just I don't have any resentment issues. It just made me rise to the occasion.
Oh, woo! Yeah.
Anyway, but that's the highlight there, man. Low profile tires, man, they'll just blow out on those bad potholes. That's what I get for driving
low profile tires on your truck, or is this
no? This is it's a Cadillac.
Okay, all right.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I was gonna say that doesn't really make sense to me. Well,
it's my COVID Cadillac that I got with COVID. Right. My COVID deal. Yeah,
yeah. I know the feeling. I have the low profiles on my car as well. So, I'm curious. Just doing a quick check in here. What's the status of the COVID situation out there in Texas? In other words, so I'll give you a quick update on California. From this past weekend, actually, when was it? Like last Wednesday, Thursday, they reinstituted the, hey, you got to eat outside and this and that. So all the restaurants have, they're not doing dine-in anymore. Basically, right? So they're doing dine-in only on patio seating. So it's kind of like they went from, all the way to the one end of the spectrum, and then they kind of brought it back a little bit, I feel like. Not all the way toward the beginning of where we were a couple months ago, but definitely they ratcheted it back quite a bit. Is that what they're doing there in Texas, or have you guys softened or strengthen
it's kind of like, and I'm basically right, it's kind of a moving goalpost, but restaurants around 50%, but everybody's got to wear a mask in public places unless they're eating or drinking or whatever. But so it's certainly masks are around, but it seems like things are still open right now. But there's that looming threat. I know my kid starts college here in a few weeks, and they are scrambling at these universities to do live classes, online classes, remote classes. But some of these engineers and pre-med and pre-vet, these people that have labs, they can't get around it. You got to be there for those labs.
I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, they'll figure it out. But it's just, it's an interesting time. And, I guess there's one other theme before I know we have a great guest on for today that you're going to be introducing.
Absolutely.
No, I'll call it the word of the day. And in discussions with some people that are near and dear to my heart, you know, this morning and kind of all through the weekend, word of the day, and really the theme, I think, which will probably be for the near future, will be resiliency.
Yes.
Resiliency with the changing regulations and situations of COVID, of the professional workforce, which will be responding to those changing regulations.
Right.
It's an interesting time right now. And definitely, you know, if you're not resilient, you're going to be left in the dust.
And I have this awesome book on resilience. I'm looking for it, I guess. Okay, I'll have to just get that out for next time. But yes, resilience, hardiness.
Yeah.
They talk about hardiness somewhere in that literature. But yeah, that's definitely what's going on. And man, speaking of resilience, our guest has shown resilience from her experience being an entrepreneur, a businesswoman, just about everything, and then running into some trouble, we'll say, and then encountering the Federal Bureau of Prisons and having to stay there for a while. And now that she's out, and so unlike our guest last week, our guest is out and fully served all of her paper. And so even though we can't see our guest, we can identify our guest because she's a free woman now. So, and I'm really excited because a lot of women, when they get out of prison, just are overwhelmed with the responsibilities of their lives and children or trying to get on their feet. And I'm sure our guest has done the same, but she's really got some things moving forward that I want our listeners to hear about. And we always, you know, you and I always talk about mindset, and man, what a great place to develop a mindset than serving prison time. So definitely. Anyhow, so let's bring on Cheryl Womack. Cheryl, thanks for coming on the show today. Glad to have you. Glad you could be with us.
I appreciate it, Bruce and Justin. Sorry, no photo, but I very much appreciate being a part of your program today.
Well, fantastic. So tell us a little bit about yourself and talk about helping women in prison.
Sure. So through my 30s, after getting through my stunt of the disco queen, since those were the days.
You were a disco queen.
I was a disco queen. Those are my favorite things to do. I started working for a gentleman in the insurance trucking business, and he put insurance on independent truck drivers. And I helped him grow his business pretty successfully, one girl operation up to five of us. And then eventually, just to keep this short, he ended up hiring a man and asking the man to teach me, for me to teach him everything, you know, that I've done so that he essentially could become all our bosses. The guy was 50 some years old, the nicest man, but this was early 80s and, you know, people just didn't think women should run businesses. I was married to a man who traveled all over the United States at the time, and so he wasn't home. He says, just stay home and take care of your husband, who, of course, was not home. So I quit and started my own business. Girls weren't smart enough to have non-competes back then. I had taken so much care of these trucking companies and drivers that it was not a problem to go call on them and fly around. And, you know, these were before cell phones and computers and all that. So I flew all over the United States all the time to call on trucking companies and grew my business. And when I'd left my boss in his heyday, I'd grown his business to about $250,000 a month in insurance premium. When I sold my, which it started out at $25,000 a month, when I sold my business in 2002, I was doing about $3.5 million a month. So we exploded. We grew. We had on-site daycare. You know, we did a lot of great things. I mean, the biggest fun for me in running a company is growing employees and creating opportunities. Not so much. I hated the insurance part, and I love the truckers. So I sold the business, and then I went into a whirlwind, a spinfall, where, you know, you think you're the master of one thing, so you should be the master of everything, and you're not. And so I got into a lot of bad deals. I hired and brought over my comptroller, who ended up embezzling $3 million from me. And then she decided that she would set me up if I ever caught her and accuse me of tax evasion. Now, she's the one doing my taxes, but that's what she decided. So I never got charged with tax evasion. I never did time for tax evasion. I did time for impeding the government, a process charge. But that got me 14 months in a federal camp. Just before then, I'd spent 6 years traveling the globe as I was chairperson of an organization called Leading Women Entrepreneurs of the World. When I got inducted into the group, I needed to have many glasses of wine to say it. It seemed so heady and big. But honestly, after I took ownership of it and created some, made a not-for-profit and began to put women together and teach them how to partner globally, I became very proud of it. And we were in several countries before this happened. So then I've had now the good fortune of going to the underworld country, and that would be a federal camp.
Well, yes. And so the good news is you went to a federal camp. It wasn't a low or Carswell high rise or.
You're exactly right. Yes. I count my blessings for where I really do count my blessings. I count my blessings that I got to self-surrender. I count my blessings that I had a smart enough attorney that helped me pick a designated spot that was close enough to my family, not real close. It was still 4.5 hours, but they could come and see me. My husband missed one weekend in 14 months.
Wow.
Yeah, he was great.
Wow.
Yeah, he was great.
That's
my kids
good
came.
Man.
He was a good man. If ever he did anything before, he's forgiven of all forever.
All right. So, yeah. Fantastic. So tell me about your focus, you know, moving forward from that experience and the focus on the women. What's been the driver for this effort?
Well, for me, I didn't know anything about what does a prisoner look like? You know, what does an inmate look like? What does somebody look like who's gone to jail? And what does a person who's gone to jail for drugs look like? Which is probably 90%+ of the people who are, you know, going to jail. So by living and breathing with these people for 14 months, I got to know the clean version of somebody who's not having addiction problems, any of the rest of that. And I got to see, I mean, I listened to everybody saying second chance, second chance, second chance. And it just irritated the crap out of me because when you listen to these stories, most of them haven't had a first chance. So to act like they need a second chance, no, they need some self-esteem and some support and some help. The other thing I realized is that I don't think people even know women go to jail, even though we've grown 800% in the last 40 years and we're the fastest growing segment of the prison population. I don't think people know women go to jail. I don't think they realize the rules that happen for jail. I don't think they realize that women are wearing men's clothes. Even when you spend your own money to buy casual clothes, you have to buy men's clothes and men's tennis shoes. And then you have to give them a 30% markup. I don't think people realize that even though it's against the law to charge on you an increased profit on postage, the government charges a 30% upcharge when they sell you postage. I mean, I just saw and learned so many things, and they shouldn't have let a person who, A, knows how to run a business, knows how to run national and international associations, and has an unbelievable memory into that place. Because my goal now is not to change laws that take too long and takes too many people who will not do their job. It's to start conversations, to get people to realize women are there. I want people to know that when you put a woman in jail, you have blown up an entire family nucleus. You're not just spending $170,000 on a woman sitting in jail that you're not doing squat for. She doesn't even have a guard after 5:30 at night until 7:30 in the morning. If it's a male guard, he will not come down there, so he does not get accused. So unless you're somewhere that has a woman's guard, you won't see a guard. So you are taking care of yourself. No gates, no locks, no fences. That's a camp. So you ask yourself, why are you spending $170,000? Then you've taken away their kids. Perhaps you're paying money now to a relative or a total stranger or somebody. And those people are on Medicare and Medicaid. And, you know, it's just, it's such a blow up. If they had a place to live, now that place has to go back into it. What I finally said is I have to get organized. I have to write a book. I have to help people understand what the process is who are never going to maybe go. I want them to also understand how easily they could go. And then I also want women and men to understand there are things that you can do to prepare to go to jail, to be prepared for why you're in jail. And the hardest part, coming out of jail. You've now institutionalized somebody. This person has learned not to jump, move, or spit until you tell them to. And then you throw them in a halfway house that is worse than a camp. And you put them in the halfway house and go, get out and get a job. Why aren't you doing something? I'm sorry, you just told me I can't move without your permission. I mean, think of Shawshank Redemption on steroids. It's crazy. So you make them responsible for behaviors that you just beat out of them. And I just, why aren't we doing things where we're trying to help these women and men understand the baby steps they need to take? It's overwhelming. I had money. I had a nice place to live. I had a supportive family. And I couldn't talk to anybody for 3 months when I came home. I was so overwhelmed with life.
Really?
Really? Total. I mean, listen to me now. I mean, I was overwhelmed with life. I mean, I didn't want to talk to anybody. And then your whole family says, okay, put in your past. Let's don't talk about prison. I'm obsessed with prison. Don't talk about prison. I mean, this has got to be fixed. Exactly.
I'm obsessed with prison. I am. That's good. Yeah. And, you know, I look forward to getting to know you, you know, better as well. I get constantly asked to present large law firms that have lots of, you know, clients going into prison and probation offices that have large pretrial.
Yes.
You know, large pretrial loads. And so we'll have to team up and you can represent the female side, because although I was in a women's prison for 6 years, God rest my soul and bless my soul for being at Carswell. I opened it, was there from 94 to 2000, all levels, max security, everything.
Wow. Wow.
And yeah, God loved me. And I was missing the shanks and knives from prior penitentiaries. So much easier than working with women. But anyway, that's another story.
Trust me, it's easier work. So you got to know, I put insurance on 14,000 truck drivers for 20 years, truck mostly men. And then I headed up 315 women globally. Oh my God, women are so tough.
They can be.
Impossible.
but I'm not, and it's not a, like you said, only 6% of the nation's population is female. It is still growing, but it still holds to 6-7%. And this is kind of the forgotten. The least of these, almost. Right. They're one up from the sexual offender in the criminal justice system. But you're right. You know, wearing the jumpsuits and wearing the men's clothing and those things. And so I know that must have been a shock for you. Real quick, on your sentence, how much RRC time did you get? Did you get 2, 3, 4 months of halfway house, or just a couple of months? Because you were.
Well, so they had a thing that said at 65 years of age, you were supposed to get some additional good time, especially if you've been on good behavior. And I went in at 67.
So
I never got more good time. Yeah, this is crazy. I'll be 70 at the end of this month. And
you are a spry 70. I mean,
well, absolutely. Told my kids I'm living to 120, so I got lots to do. So when I'm in there, I mean, they had a standing bet with all the prisoners. They say, how old do you think that woman is, as I'm bouncing around? And they'd say, oh, 50s. And they'd say, okay, pay up. Because they'd come up and go, how old are you? My nickname was Biddy. Like, oh, Biddy.
Yeah.
But it was very endearing, because if a stranger called me Biddy, my group of friends would come up and go, you can't call her Biddy. She's my Biddy. Very territorial. Very territorial. But I taught entrepreneurism while I was there. We did business plans for things to do to improve the quality of life of prisoners. 3/4-way houses. How to find a job. Training programs. We did lots of those kinds of things, and I did 2 different semesters of that. If I'd have been there longer, we'd have done speech, because they need to be able to get up and present in front of public, and I didn't get that far. I ran Big Sisters, and I can tell you firsthand, when you come into prison, they do not give you a brush, a toothbrush, toothpaste, a comb, a bar of soap. You do not get those things. So even if you think you're getting the basic standard of living things, it's not happening.
You got to be careful with the welcome wagon. Sometimes those girls want to catch a favor later on for being nice to you in the front. But anyway, that's another level of
situation. And you read that. And so if anybody brings anything to you, you're like, I'm not touching this. Well, they go, no strings attached, I promise. And then the other thing they all ask you is if you're gay for the stay. And it's like, are you kidding me? Do you know how old I am? Give me a break.
Gay for the stay. Gay for the stay. Good for you. That's another one. Of,
yes, and they put me in the Troublemakers bus stop. So all young girls who got in trouble for various sundries of things were in this bus stop that I got put in, and I ended up having to kick down the door and stop inside sex and a few other things going on. And we became a very calm, wonderful place to live, where people would come to, you know, get away from crazy.
Were you ever tempted to participate in contraband cell phones or anything like that? I know there's a lot of contraband.
No. The only thing I wish is I had all the money I could spend. to buy for phones and things that they'd give you and emails. And that only allowed me 10 minutes a day to talk to my husband. Hmm. I saved an extra 15 minutes so that if there was an emergency or I needed to talk to a bank or somebody, you know, then I would have that. And then I'd get to talk to my husband extra at the end of the month if nothing came up. But I did both of my boys on the chat thing that they have where you can talk for 25 minutes when it works.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't always work. I mean, everything there is like circa 40 years ago. It's just, plus, why do we have women in there? What we're training to be plumbers and carpenters and everything else. So in my opinion, that whole place ought to look brand damn new all the time with a construction section turning out every time you turn around. But instead, because the lazy ass $15 an hour guard doesn't want to do his job, he won't let any of them do anything.
Just standing over the hole, huh?
Oh, awesome. He goes, do you have an order for that? If you don't get an order from the warden, you cannot walk on the grass. The grass is huge. They don't want you sitting on your bed, but there's 12 benches for 300 some women. Where are we supposed to go? I mean, it's just stupid.
Stupid. Wow. Real quick, let's go back. I know what we're going out of sequence here, and I know Justin wants to hear this. Justin's very, very dialed in into entrepreneurship and on many levels. So let's go back to your class. What aspects of entrepreneurship would you teach to the female inmates? You said it before, but say it again so our listeners can really savor that.
The very first thing that we did, because 90% of the room had never done it, is we set goals because they'd never set one. We set goals you could accomplish in a week. We set goals you could accomplish in 30 days. We set goals clear out if you weren't in jail for over 5 years. We set them out for just when you got out. What would those goals look like? Then we got to watch them as we met once a week, meet their goals and say, oh my gosh, I met a goal. And then we just went through the strategy of what does a skill set look like? What are you capable of doing? You know, let's talk about the kinds of skill sets. If you were moving and selling drugs, if you were making the product, if you were doing this or that, let's identify the skill sets that you would use in business. I mean, I'm able to take, you know, whatever they did and just say, don't come in here and act stupid to me. You know, if this stuff were happening on the street and you were moving it, bam, 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 you know, then you don't get to come in here and be stupid. You have to come in here and say, what did I do? What were my strengths? What were my weaknesses? And how can we apply those? And so, you know, some of them just wanted to open a place for dogs where they'd take care of and train dogs or be the best place that people could bring their pets for doggy daycare or retreats and stuff. But others want to go in. And then the part that was the craziest is when we came up with a 3/4 way house for women to stay in, which I'm building one actually in Maryville, Missouri. We had one, they had more rules than the prison had. And I went, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, girls, we've let them out of jail. We have to give them some freedom and they have to learn to make mistakes. You know, we have to see what the parameters are, but we wrote very good business models and then did presentations in front of the warden wouldn't come and the camp administrator wouldn't come. But the CEO who ran the cafeteria came, and then I paid to have awards sent in and signed. And, you know, we presented them each with a certificate, which
is nice.
It's gold. You know, it's just to have something to have. So, I mean, again, I think you need to treat prison like you've just been given a cancer sentence. You now have to take responsibility to know everything about your predicament. You have to know it. And you have to do the research. And you have to see who else might be able to help you.
So let me ask you this. So I would think it would be this kind of cocktail of low self-esteem,
yes,
which is bad. Also, some inmates not taking responsibility for their actions or blaming this or that. And then...
Well, I'm going to tell you the thing. I can't speak to men because I'm not one, though sometimes I wonder about that. But I will say, shame is your biggest hurdle.
Okay.
You're so ashamed. Whether you did it or not, you're ashamed. It's public. I was all over the front page of every damn paper in Kansas City. So it's like, oh, yay, so happy. I mean, I was a big fish in a little pond. And I'd done national and international stuff. So, of course, it made it national and international. Thank you very much. And so the shame of it is you have to rally past it. And the biggest thing I had to get through, even to do the things I'm doing now, is to say I'm going to have to wear the fact that I went to prison with a badge of honor because I can't help anybody if I can't keep relating to them and being one of them. I mean, I went to prison. That's all there is to it. When I die someday, they may say I did all these amazing things in the world, and then it'll have a footnote of And when
when you look back on your situation, do you think it was because you hired the wrong CFO? Were there other things for you that?
No, absolutely. I hired because when we went to the CFO from the old business to ask him to stand on the trial, he said maybe he would and maybe he wouldn't. He'd been in trouble himself for other stuff that he'd done. And he just, so we didn't have a guarantee, but the only witness they had, honestly, was the girl who was my comptroller. And she did 8 months in jail. I mean, she went to jail. So there's a fine witness for you. And we caught her, you know, making up emails and mocking them up in trials. The FBI got in trouble by the judge and got written up in motions for lying to me and trickery and deceit. It's a permanent part of the record. I'm going to do a book about it. But first, I have to do books to help women and men.
Right. Yeah. I was just, you know, wondering, had you reflected on your own situation as well?
Every CO there asked me, do you wish you'd have just let her get away with it? Hell yes. It cost me $5 million just for my attorney to try not to go to jail and 3.5 years of my life. I don't know which is worse, losing $5 million or 3.5 years of my life. They're both pretty horrible. I mean, you just when you finally get told you're going to jail and where you're going, you just want it to be over.
Okay. And one of your chapters is the Groundhog Day. I know I'm going out of order again, like you said, the repetitiveness.
Every day that speaker goes off at 6 o'clock to tell you the breakfast room is going to open. Come get your mail if you've got contraband, you know. And then we would have a second one because the girls wouldn't get out of bed. Get to work, you know. Then the, you know, I was a town driver, so I was always being called in the morning. Town driver, get up here and blah blah blah. It never stops. You can count on at least every hour. There's messages going out. And if they don't show up for their GED class, they're calling them by name, telling them to get into their GED class. It's like, you wonder why they don't take any responsibility? I mean, when my kids didn't come to my class, I just sent somebody over and said, we're all sitting here waiting for you. Get to class.
They're like the enabling parent, right?
Yes.
Like, get up, Susie.
Yes. Oh, please. It's a lovely, I mean, you sit there and go, the openings they give you for breakfast on a sunny day sound like you're on a cruise ship. But I'm sorry, I'm on a metal slab with a 2-inch blue leather with a blue plastic thing on my mat, and this is not a cruise ship.
Attention on the compound. We're doing bingo at 2, shuffleboard at 3.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the other thing. Every time they do something for you, they just shove in your face. They don't have to do this for you. They're doing you a favor. Why don't they have to do it for us? What do they make $170,000 a year for inmates that are going in there? What are they doing with their money? And then at the one I was at, the camp administrator and the assistant warden embezzled $2 million from that camp. So that 30% they charge on everything that you buy, built up and built up, why, if it's for our good, why didn't they spend it? Why did they let it build to $2 million where it could be embezzled? And then they just moved in, one, the warden, assistant warden retired, and the other woman just went to a new camp.
So it goes.
Crazy, crazy. And then God don't get sick. So, I mean, this book will have a simple will and a simple living will. Because if you go into a coma, I mean, you have to get, the book's going to have real simple things in it that says things like, make one friend who, if something happens and you get pulled away to the shoe, or if you have an emergency, or suddenly Con Air needs to take you away.
Explain to Justin what the shoe is.
The shoe is where they put you away from everybody in isolation because you've been a bad person. So, you know, they, so like one time they thought, so I have a pretty extensive loan on my home because I'd done real well, but I borrowed against my home for this. And so I was on a phone call with my son talking about getting the loan refinanced because the bank threw me out once I went to jail. And so I had to get it refinanced and relocated. And because it was so much, they were convinced I was doing business, which you can't do in jail. And I literally had to go have a fight with them and go, I'm sorry you're not familiar with this size of a loan, but it is my house loan. You do not get to, I mean, you have to fight with them.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, they're not used to people fighting. I would fight with several of them.
Yeah.
But you fight in a respectful way, in a respectful way, you know.
If this book thing doesn't work, you gotta go and do stand up comedy. Just for your talk.
I agree.
It's tragic, which your delivery is so unique and spot on. It's and I keep on stirring the pot, you know. I can't help myself.
And I want people to wanna hear more because you know everything I'm saying to you, the average person has to listen to 7 to 14 times before they've heard the part that's important. And there are so many parts that are important.
Yes. Yes.
So, Cheryl, I got a quick question for you. You know, going back to the, you know, time at the halfway house and where you were coaching the women up, do you have a particular favorite story of triumph that you could share?
Well, I do. I think the biggest triumph is that we wrote the business plan for the three-quarter way house that I'm now building in Maryville, Missouri. We wrote that business plan there. We laid out the ground rules and what we were going to do with it, what kind of place it had to be. This is just a four-bedroom older house that I've gutted and done the outside on, and I'm starting on the inside. But older women, so I had a bunkie. It's hard for me to say older woman because she was 50 and I'm 70. At 50 years old, they're terrified. I was a town driver, and I would take these women to the doctors, and some of them hadn't left for 7 years, and I cannot tell you how they shook. Their whole bodies trembled. Now I'm taking you to the bus to go either to another location or get a bus to go to the halfway house. And I mean, I found myself constantly putting my arms around them and saying, listen, let's think about how you can do this. You know, you just take it one day at a time, because they couldn't calm down.
I got to ask you something about being town driver.
Yeah.
And if you were a dude, this would be an easier question. But when you came back, did they, you know, have another change of clothes for you and do the whole?
They did nothing. Matter of fact, I was so free to go in and out because I was a town driver. I could have brought the world in and taken the world out.
Justin, I got to tell you. So I for many years, I worked at the South Central Regional Office. We had town driver people from Segoville, which is a male prison, right? And we had Justice Department cars on Cedar Springs where the office was. Okay. So the guy comes out, he's a town driver. He's driving around town. He drops off cars. He goes back to the prison. You know what they do to him when he goes back to prison? That dude is stripped, is what he is, right?
Wow.
They take all his clothes off. They look up his butt, look at his teeth, his ears. Yeah.
I must admit, in the camp, I was very fortunate. I hope there were just a few of them that got butt searches. It didn't happen to me.
Did they at least pat you down when you got back?
No. And they let me carry a bag. They let me carry a bag. Because here's the thing. So if they send you out, you may not come back all day. And, you know, lunch is at 10:30 in the morning. So you got to take something to eat. They give you no money. You gas up your car. One time I got lost. And I ended up about an hour and a half away from where I was supposed to be. And the guards calling me going, where the hell are you? And I'm like, I do not know.
Did you have a
cell phone from 1990s and a GPS from the old original Garmin GPS. So it just spins all the time trying to figure out where you are because everything's changed so much. So they send you into St. Louis and it spins and it turns and you're on the highway trying to figure out where to go. And then you have to go up and you have to go find a guard and beg the guard to please not tow your car away.
And you end up in East St. Louis and you become
I have ended up all sorts. This woman freaked, and I had my passenger had surgery that day and she was out cold. She didn't even know she was on a joyride. But often when I was a town driver, I initiated this thing called Mammogram Thursdays. And every other Thursday, I'd go down to the garden and go, it's Mammogram Thursday, give me the big van. And I'd take like 10 women and we'd go for mammograms. And they just quit asking you questions because you said, here's what we're doing, here's where we're going. You'd herd them in and they'd go, are you the guard, ma'am? And I went, no, I'm not the guard, I'm one of them. And they're like, oh. So anyway, obviously I didn't carry myself quite the same way. And, you know, people could tell that they'd come and they'd say, what'd you do, Womack? Did you pull one of those tags off a mattress? Why are you here? I said, what, are you not afraid of me? What's the deal here?
Read about it in the Kansas City Star or whatever.
Or everywhere else. Jesus, just Google it. It's about 30 pages of how I broke the law. Yeah.
So you didn't, so you weren't tempted to go through Starbucks or anything like that, go through the line?
I was not. Here's how I was about town driver. This person's getting out and I get to get out every day now, all the time. So I would say, what kind of music do you like? Do you want the windows down or up? You know, I try to make it an experience for them and keep them calm.
First of all, some of those women probably should be in an ambulance. I can't believe you're just hauling somebody.
Trust me.
Invasive medical procedure. So Justin, long story short, another concept is the town driver. Town driver is a coveted position. I mean, if you're in a low minimum security federal prison, being the town driver is like, being like,
it was the bomb.
The trustee of all trustees. Yeah, man, just unbelievable. So, gosh, that was a definitely.
I mean, and your name's called all the time, and you get to know. So they have the RDAP dorm, and they have the bad people dorm, the people who aren't in RDAP.
I'm more impressed that you were a town driver than what you did with the trucking company. That was amazing. I mean, not really.
Okay, but so I have to tell you a funny.
That is amazing.
I have to tell you a funny story about town driving. So I have all sons and a husband, and they won't let me drive. And so when I said, send my driver's license in, I'm going to be a town driver, they're like, what? You're not going to be a town driver.
That's the government.
Said, I am. So they've got the two town drivers were, I call them Thelma and Louise. Thelma, Louise was 68 years old, 67 years old, and I was 69 years old. Driving everybody around.
On Mammogram Thursday.
On Mammogram Thursday in a bread truck. And one time I hit a car in the bus. I took a woman in. I called my husband and I said, I've got a name and number for you. Please get hold of them and take care of the situation. He goes, who the hell did you hit? Now, I'm on a phone where they're listening to the phone calls, and I am not a happy girl. I'm like, do you really have to say that? Just make the phone call and make this go away. They never.
On the government cell phone.
Yeah.
They issued you. Lovely.
Yes. I'm just saying, no. On the, this is me calling. My cell phone wouldn't call anybody but the front desk of the FCI. So if anything happened, you know, if you ran out of gas or, I mean, when I got lost an hour and a half, I had a quarter of a tank, and I've got my guard going, good luck. Hope you make it home. Because, you know, you got no money. You got a car and you got a passed out passenger who's had surgery. It was crazy.
My goodness. So the 3/4-way house. So when have you actually procured the land and everything? Or where is that project?
It's in Maryville, Missouri. When you get on the website, you can see where it is. It looked like a ghost house. It was pretty bad. We've redone all the wood. It really looked terrible. But it's on Main Street, and there's a Hope House right down the street, and it's a university town, and it's a very economic town for somebody.
Did you have to get special zoning and permission to have a group?
I made them take it to the city before I bought the house, and they said it'll be fine. Oh, I said, you get it up there, and you make sure that when I buy this, I'm not going to have to jump through hoops. Though, I would have figured it out either way. So, but it's on Main Street, so there's commercial around it and stuff, and so that worked. But so if you're 50 or older and you're a woman and you just have what's on your back and you really don't have that much money or you don't think you have that much money, you need to be able to get a room on a month-to-month basis, and that's what a 3/4-way house is.
And have you made connections with the community, local restaurants, other businesses that will give these women employment?
Well, yes, because I have a farm up here, and I started a business up here called Countryside Bistro, a restaurant, about 15 years ago, where we do like a wedding every weekend. And the unemployment here is they have manufacturing jobs and also in a university. So it's a good place to come get a job. Yeah, okay. I mean, definitely, because part of what has to be put together after we get the houses together is, again, how do you go set goals? How do you sit down and decide what phone calls do you want to make today? You sort of have to make the girl more afraid not to make her phone calls than to come and tell you she didn't make them.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's exactly how it is. It's like, I mean, I've got a girl I'm mentoring who's my housekeeper, and she was getting some things fixed on her business for her. She needed to link her accounts together because if she moved the money and she moved it wrong, she'd get an insufficient fund charge. I said, link those damn accounts and go back there and tell them. So she got the accounts linked, but she didn't ask for her money back. I made her get back in that line and get that money back. It's like, you have the money there. You need to link the, I mean, just, there's so many simple things that you can do to be successful, and people just are overwhelmed and they don't think of them. So I always like to look at what they've got and break it down to little bitty pieces.
Yeah, I like the fact that you do that skill set assessment too. Can you see what you're working with? That's real important.
I mean, somebody like me, I'm a talker. I mean, you know, you say, what are you good at? I'm good at talking. You know, I'm good at talking people into stuff.
Is it like the Strengths Finder or which skills test is it exactly?
Or is it interview?
It's just interview. You're going to sit down with them, and as they talk to you, they're not going to know what their skill sets are. You are going to know what their skill sets are. You're going to see how well they can manage their life. You're going to see how organized they are. I got a bunkie in there that I wrote the children's book about, that she could find me anything in that camp but a laptop computer. And I swore I thought she'd give me one of those. So I said, do you know what skill sets you have and what people would pay to have somebody like you around? She was clueless. She thought she was an idiot. So it takes so little, like it does with everything, to get people to begin to realize what they're good at.
Yeah. And again, and I hear what you're saying, Justin, about using the Strengths Finder, but I'm telling you, this is a special, well, you know, our guest aside, but it's a special group of ladies that, yeah, you just need to start some of them from ground zero and just build
because
it up.
They told me that if you were 14 years old and heavily doing drugs, your brain stuns at 14 years old.
Yeah.
You might be dealing with a 14-year-old mindset that you've now got to grow up and give confidence and just, you know, keep being there. I mean, I made the kids read in my social studies class. I made them read the Wall Street Journal with me and see how it applied, you know, and every time something went, and then when they said they weren't going to vote for Trump and he was passing all this stuff, I went in there and I said, if he lets anybody out, if one of you takes this and you aren't going to vote for Trump, you just stay right here. I just said, you know, you don't get to vote for people. I don't care who you vote for, but don't badmouth them and then take the deal.
And then benefit from the all the prison reforms.
From the fallout.
Benefit from the First Step Act.
Either shut up and be neutral or.
I know. I just hate that. Yeah.
I hate that.
You don't want to pin a bad tail on that donkey, especially if you're sitting in a federal prison getting all these benefits because of the First Step Act. And there's going to be a Second Step Act that's going to do things. And then we're doing things with COVID-19 releases, and there's going to be a new wave on how to sort through. We're working on some rubrics and metrics on how to sort through the national rosters.
Nice.
And thin down these camps and lows. And we're really giving some good consultation to Washington, D.C.
I mean, it's a wonderful thing. It's horrible they have this kind of a pandemic to have to deal with it, but it's a wonderful opportunity. And again, that's what I told the girls. I said, listen, there's a whole industry for how to teach people to be better prisoners and better recoveries from prisons after there. And now what you are is an expert. And I said, you have to take that expertise and we have to figure out how we can use it. I've lined up girls across the United States that I think can go give talks and tell people about being in prison and what kinds of changes, subtle changes that cost no money would improve the quality of life. So I want I want to do a continuing seminar for people in the criminal justice system where you walk them through a woman's prison system so that, you know, they have to take continuing education. The attorneys do too. So why not take this class? I think it'll be entertaining. It's going to teach them a lot of things about women's prisons they don't know. My counselor at Greenville, retired, called me and I'm telling him things about the camp that he didn't know. And he was the friggin' counselor.
Oh yeah. There's a whole other world.
Years. Oh geez. I'm disgusted. I just said, get off my phone. I said, the only reason you talk to me in camp is because you like my husband's pickup truck. You wouldn't even give me the time of day. And now that you see I'm trying to do something for these and you want to figure out there's a way for you to get in on it. Just get off my phone. Don't call me.
Savage. Trying to get on that gravy train that whatever.
Can you believe that? And you think your husband won't sell his truck? Is he going to get a new one? I said, oh, probably someday. And he goes, you think he could say that till I retire? Because I can't make a deal with you, you know, while I'm still working here. And I went, you're trying to.
I'll get you some extra toilet paper for that truck.
Yeah, boy. Well, I could use more than four rolls a week. Anybody could have.
Feminine hygiene products.
Well, see, and those are going to some of the things, because if you're a woman in prison and you have done drugs, or if you're older and you've had medical problems, the typical amount of hygiene products a woman might use isn't remotely sufficient. So you have women like me who I'm blessed. I don't use any of them for all sorts of reasons that I would get in line to get extras so I could give them to the women who needed them, because some of those women are on their period 365 days a year.
The biggest metric when we built Carswell was the biggest metric. I'll never forget. We were the next most expensive prison than Admin Max in Florence. And once we hit sewage capacity for 3,000 women, per diem wage, it was sewage capacity.
And
anyway.
that's when they, the toilet, let me tell you. You go in the showers, you go other places. We had a big woman who came in there and she did not like to wear underpants because she was a big woman and it was just...
Oh my God! Stop! Yeah,
it was bad. It was bad.
Bad.
Came into the visiting room once, and I told my husband that girl doesn't like to wear underpants, and he goes, "You can't see what I just saw. I know she doesn't like to wear underpants." Yeah.
Let's get to higher ground here. We got about 4 minutes left before we finish today. Let's talk about where folks can go to your website and talk about the Women of Worth WOW and how they can connect with you.
Great. You can go to the website, which is www.womenofworthwow.org. It's going to tell you the current events, what's going on. You can buy a children's book. If you buy a children's book for $15, you get one, and one goes to a woman sitting in a prison or camp somewhere. I've given out 400 of those so far. You can also get on Facebook under Women of Worth-Prison Reform, and I have a site there. What I really would love to hear from these guys on is what I love the most about you guys' Facebook site is how interactive it is. And I would love to find a way to get more
I took a page out of my co-host Justin's playbook. I built a tribe, you know.
And the
people from various, I got men, women, pre-trial people inside, outside doing their paper. It's really been a fantastic community of families and offenders, attorneys, judges. There's a lot of federal judges in there that don't say anything. They're hiding.
Absolutely.
And so, so definitely that's been a backbone. That and the YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is driving me business. The views don't necessarily, but the pass-through rate's slowing down, and I'm getting a fair amount of business from the YouTube channel, people using videos like they would Google. So I would encourage you to do a YouTube channel as well.
And I'm going to say one last thing. I gave a talk in a men's state prison in Philadelphia in February with the CPAC group. And they did it with Van Jones as well. And I sat amongst the guys and talked about stuff. And basically every time, so the whole panel that's up there is there's like two of us who've been to jail. And all the rest of them are experts. And as I sat by the men, they just sit there going, is that true? Is that true? Because they don't believe people who haven't done time.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a complete panel of experts, but for God's sakes, call on these people, you know, to help. You know, do the work and give the information that needs to be gotten out there.
All right, then we will definitely have you come back on the show. We, you know, of course, I did a good job of train wrecking it, but that's good. You just have a fantastic personality. You have a lot to offer these folks, and it sounds like your community with the Three Quarter Way House and some of your other efforts are going to be really successful And you know what? Your heart's in the right place. I can really hear that. I'm so glad we got to do this show. I feel like I know you better after the show.
I'll tell you something else first. Before I went to jail, I got lost and wondered, what am I going to do with my life? Prison has given me a purpose.
It sure has.
I love it.
And hope you'll stick with it. All right, folks. Well, there it is. Another fantastic episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Don't forget to see us on our social media, Facebook page, The Concierge Coaches on Instagram, LinkedIn, and of course, we're on Apple Podcast and several other podcast aggregators. You can see all our prior shows and download them yourself on the LA Talk Radio website. We have our own page there, Justin and I do, and it has all of our prior shows for your enjoyment and downloading pleasure as well. So Justin, how can folks reach you?
Yep. So the best way is through my website, which is nimmergood.com. And there's all kinds of great questionnaires depending on what you're looking for. And if you take the time to fill it out, you'll become eligible to receive a copy of my book, which is on entrepreneurship for all those that are
awesome read.
Operation. It's a good, quick read with lots of tools, tips, and tricks.
Awesome. Sounds good, Justin. I'm at conciergecoach.net. So everybody, have a blessed and safe week, and we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.